It's about political family dynasties in Illinois. We meet former Congressman Tim Johnson, a product of a family political tradition reaching from his grandparents to his own grown children. Illinois Public Media's Jim Meadows reports.
It's December, and I am out mall walking with Tim Johnson in the final weeks of his final term as a congressman.
You want this background? My mother's father, Arthur Evans, was the chief of staff for Congressman Funk, who served from Bloomington, but actually was a congressman at large for Illinois back in the maybe the teens and the 20s.
The 66-year-old Johnson keeps a brisk pace as he walks through Lincoln Square in Urbana, a cell phone and his communications director close by, while he reviews his political family tree. There's Johnson's grandfather, Kirby Johnson, close to the family of Harry Truman, back during Truman's days with the Tom Pendergast machine in Kansas City. Tim Johnson's father, Robert, broke away from those southern Missouri Democratic roots to marry a Republican, eventually becoming one himself. Robert Johnson went on to become a Champaign County GOP chairman and an alderman representing Urbana's 6th Ward.
Well, my dad was universally regarded as the most honest politician in the history of American politics, and I think that even people who diametrically opposed him in philosophy would agree that Bob Johnson was a person of real high integrity.
Is that the sort of thing that he mentored you on?
Yeah,
I mean, what
it really
particular
is.
Advice
yeah.
did you get from him?
Oh, well, first advice is hard work. You know, you don't get elected because of your good looks or because your name's on the ballot. You get elected because of a lot of hard work. So he showed me that. He just showed me organizational skills, working in the precincts and so forth. And then just embedded in me the concept of honesty and, you know, populist. My dad was essentially a populist. He had a terrific close relationship with the people that he represented.
Tim Johnson's own political career took him to his father's seat on the Urbana City Council, then to 24 years in the Illinois House, followed by 12 in the U.S. House. Johnson's daughter, Urbana Alderwoman Heather Stevenson, is just the most visible of several politically active siblings and offspring who have joined Tim Johnson over the years as products of a family immersed in politics.
I don't ever remember a dinner time with my grandparents or my dad and mom when politics and government and so forth wasn't discussed. It was an active part of our everyday life.
You know, one thing that struck me, having that experience of growing up with politics, when you must have known other kids at school, say, growing up, who didn't have it, who maybe what they got from their parents was hostility to politics in general, or just not a real understanding of how the system worked.
That's true, Jim. You did have a certain amount of that. More apathy than hostility, I think. But with our family, and as I said, with both sets of grandparents and my parents, politics and government was an everyday part of your life, and it was regarded as an honorable occupation, an honorable profession. It was an everyday part of our life.
Tim Johnson is now a former congressman. He cited urgent but unnamed family reasons in deciding not to seek a 7th term. Tim's daughter Heather Stevenson is also stepping down this spring after 2 terms on the Urbana City Council. The level of political activity in the Johnson family could change with the next election cycle, but once Stevenson leaves office, that level will be down to 2 seats on the Champaign County Republican Precinct Committee, held by Tim's brother, Tom Johnson, a former Champaign County board member, and Tom's daughter, August Johnson. I'm Jim Meadows, Illinois Public Media.
Our series on political families concludes tomorrow when we talk to mother and daughter Republicans Linda Frank and Deb Frank Finan. You're listening to The Afternoon Magazine on WILL. I'm Chris Berube. And every once in a while, WILL organizes something called a Community Cinema Night. When we do these, we show a documentary at the Champaign Public Library and have a conversation about it afterwards. And tonight, we're screening a film called The Power Broker, Whitney Young's Fight for Civil Rights. Before seeing this movie, I didn't really know very much about Young, but he is considered one of the most important civil rights leaders in America. Young worked behind the scenes with people like President John F. Kennedy and Henry Ford to reform institutions from within to find equality for African Americans. Here's a clip from the trailer for The Power Broker.
You don't get black power by chanting it. You get it by doing what the other groups have done. The Irish kept quiet. They didn't shout Irish power or Jew power or Italian power. They kept their mouths shut and took over the police department of New York City. and the mayorship of Boston.
Whitney Young's genius was, he knew how to accomplish what other people were merely for.
So joining me now is Henry Radcliffe, who is a producer for Outreach here at WILL. Hi, Henry. How are you?
Good morning. How are you doing today?
I'm well, thanks. So the movie you're showing tomorrow is called The Power Broker, Whitney Young's Fight for Civil Rights. And Whitney Young is really a figure I actually didn't really know very much about in terms of the civil rights movement in America. Could you put him in context for us?
Well, Whitney was one of the people who was working behind the scenes. He was very comfortable working behind the scenes with the business community in America. He was comfortable working with people like Henry Ford, and he was very comfortable and made people in the business community comfortable talking with him. They could see him as an equal. He helped a lot of organizations integrate their workforces. Some of the other things, because of his role working with the different business organizations and communities, he started to sort of alienate himself with the masses that were running the civil rights movement. And as he was doing a lot of his work, he was becoming out of step with the main masses that were sort of running it at the time and some of the younger people that were moving in to take over the places of the older guard that were in the civil rights movement.
Yeah, as opposed to a Dr. King or, say, an Adam Clayton Powell Jr., he was working with these people who were the entrenched figures, kind of trying to change things from inside.
Which, that's right. Yeah. And a lot of that vision of changing things from inside wasn't grasped by the people that were out in the trenches. And it led to a lot of turmoil between some of the leaders. And then there were other things that also led to turmoil between the leaders, like the association that Mr. Young had with, like, the president, President Johnson at the time. And there was a big divide that came with the Vietnam War, and that Whitney Young felt that he should not necessarily challenge the president on his stance with the war because the president was actually doing quite a bit to help the civil rights movement. But Dr. King had to make a stance, and he was against the war totally. And so that sort of drove a divide between Dr. King and Whitney Young, and also helped drive that divide between Dr. King and President Johnson.
Why do you think we don't talk about somebody like Whitney Young so much anymore, and we need a documentary like this to kind of make him present for us?
Well, one of the things is so many of the characters that were working during the civil rights movement were very strong individuals, and their charisma and character kind of took over. For example, like Dr. King, he was always seen in the front, and he was doing a lot of things out in the front, whereas Whitney Young was working behind the scenes. And as behind the scenes, we didn't necessarily know or see what his work was doing until later on.
It's almost as though, you know, people distrusted him in part because he was, you know, working with white elites, but also because he wasn't really transparent. I mean, he wasn't coming out and saying, this is what we're working towards right now.
Right. And being connected to the business community, he felt that he knew how to work in the area that he was working. And he pretty much kept things that he needed to keep close to his chest so that he could get things done.
So who's going to be on the panel tonight? Who's going to be talking about the film?
We have Dr. Doris Houston. She's an associate professor of social work at Illinois State University. And Tracy Parsons, he's the former director of the Urban League of Champaign County. And Dr. Evelyn Underwood, and she is the first vice president secretary and a current life member of the Champaign County NAACP.
Absolutely. Well, Henry, these are always tremendous events, and I hope people can make it out tonight at the Champaign Public Library. What time is the film starting?
It will start shortly after 6, and we'll be discussing it until about 8:15.
All right. Well, Henry Radcliffe, thank you so much for talking to us.
And thank you for having me.
You're listening to The Afternoon Magazine on WILL.
WILL programming is made possible in part by the Little Theater on the Square in Sullivan, presenting Les Miserables from Friday, February 22nd till Sunday, March 3rd. More information is available at 217-728-7375 or online at www.thelittletheater.org.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 12th of February, 2013. It's the birthday of two men born on the same day in 1809, Charles Darwin, Abraham Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln born in a log cabin near Hodgenville, Kentucky, 1809. Unlike most presidents, he never wrote any memoirs, so we know very little about his early life. He had about 1 year of schooling. His mother died when he was nine, spent much of his adolescence working with an axe. But in his early 20s, Lincoln decided to make himself into a respectable man and moved to New Salem, Illinois, and then to Springfield. Charles Darwin, born in Shrewsbury in Shropshire, England, 1809, he read a book by Sir Charles Lyell, Principles of Geology, suggesting that the Earth was millions of years old. And Darwin went off on an expedition to the Galapagos Islands, spaced far enough apart that the animals on them had evolved over time into different species. It took him about 20 years to publish his findings in his book On the Origin of Species. This is the week of Valentine's Day, a good time to think about love letters. Zelda Fitzgerald wrote some, who was F. Scott Fitzgerald's great muse. He modeled many of his characters after her and even included lines in his books that were from her letters. They went on their first date on her 18th birthday, and she wrote him this letter when she was 18. "Sweetheart, please, please don't be so depressed. We'll be married soon, and then these lonesome nights will be over forever. There's nothing in all the world I want but you and your precious love. All the material things are nothing. Don't ever think of the things you can't give me. You've trusted me with the dearest heart of all. If you should die, oh, darling, darling Scott, it'd be like going blind. I'd have no purpose in life, just a pretty decoration. Don't you think I was made for you? I feel like you had me ordered and I was delivered to you to be worn. I want you to wear me like a watch charm or a buttonhole bouquet to the world. Without you, dearest, dearest, I couldn't see or hear or feel or think or live. I love you so, and I'm never in all our lives going to let us be apart another night." In 1920, 1 week after his novel This Side of Paradise was published, Zelda and Scott got married at St. Patrick's in New York City and became the most famous couple in America. Here's a poem for today by Sharon Bryan.